It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Raphael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us every Thursday at noon, and we thank him for saying. Raffi, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be back with you, Newell.
Raffi, let's jump into this case. I guess you pronounce it Dondra Hickman. This case is emblematic of what you and I have been talking about for a long time, the breakdown in the juvenile justice system, the transparency issue, sharing of information leading to ridiculous outcomes.
Right, right. I mean, we've been riding this dead horse for, many, many shows. But when this came across my desk, I said, I need to talk about this. And I'm putting a little different slant on it. But, so just to bring the audience up to speed on this particular case. So Dondra Hickman is 24 years old right now. In 2018, he was serving time in the Bridge City Juvenile Facility in Jefferson Parish, meaning that he had been adjudicated either by guilty plea or trial to be guilty of a juvenile delinquent offense, meaning that he was under the age of 17 at the time. And offenders usually do not get sent to a secure juvenile facility like Bridge City unless they're convicted or plead guilty to a crime of violence. So I can't sit here and tell you that I know what offense he was convicted of or pled guilty to back in 2018 as a juvenile offender, but he was in that facility, which means that he either pled guilty or was found guilty of a delinquent offense. And while he was in custody in Bridge City, he was arrested in February of 2018 for battery on a correctional officer. In April of 2018, he was arrested again for resisting an officer with force or violence. That's while he's in custody in the Bridge City facility. And then in February of 2020, he was arrested on second-degree battery. In June of 2021, he was arrested for simple escape. Later in June of 2021, he was arrested for introducing contraband into a correctional facility. And then in August of 21, he was arrested for inciting a riot in a facility. So all of that while he's in custody as a juvenile offender. And he's an adult being held in a juvenile facility, which means that he was probably sentenced to juvenile life. I can't say that I know that because that information isn't available to us because of his status as a juvenile. And therein is, the problem that we've been talking about show after show over the last, year or so. And so here's a case where eventually he was adjudicated and pled guilty to a second-degree battery case and was sentenced to the Department of Corrections as an adult, served his sentence, and was released from custody. And then after he was released, he was arrested in Orleans Parish in August of 23 for illegal possession of a stolen automobile, a possession with intent to distribute marijuana, and resisting an officer. Those charges were refused. He was arrested again in October of 2023 for battery on a dating partner. That case was refused. And in May of 24, he was arrested again on a battery on a dating partner, and that case was refused. So on August the 28th of this year, he was arrested on two counts of aggravated battery, four counts of being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm, two counts of armed robbery, PWIT, which is possession with intent to distribute narcotics, illegal carrying of a weapon while in possession of controlled dangerous substances, and theft of a motor vehicle. Oh, and I left out that the district attorney's office did accept in July of 23 him being a felon in possession of a firearm. So he has that open charge pending against him from 2023 after he had been released from serving time as an adult. And the problem goes beyond just the public not having access to that information. But when he pled guilty to the offense in Jefferson Parish, a judge in sentencing him couldn't take into consideration what he was serving time for as a juvenile offender. When the August the 28th arrest, if those charges result in some accepted cases and he ultimately is convicted or pleads guilty to these offenses, a judge can't take into consideration his history as a juvenile offender. And that means that a judge is not going to have access to current relevant information about the potential risk that this offender poses to the public and to himself. So the transparency issue doesn't just apply to the public not being able to know what violent juvenile offenders are being prosecuted for and convicted of, but the judges that are now dealing with these offenders as young adults don't have access to that information either. And that sets into, you know, motion a chain of events that results in tragedies. You know, in this particular case, you know, there were two counts of aggravated battery. I suspect those people were shot. And the intention of DeAndre Hickman is probably not to wound those people, but to kill those people. And fortunately, his aim was a little bit off. But those two aggravated battery charges could easily be murder charges, too. And so what we're seeing right here is a system that's broken. And it's not just about the delinquent offender's right to privacy, because if a judge can't take into consideration the recent violent offenses that offenders have perpetrated, they can't properly determine what the appropriate bail should be, what the appropriate sanction should be. They cannot determine whether this individual poses a continuing risk to the public because of some artificial statutory limitation that they can't even have access to his recent criminal history as a delinquent, violent offender. So, you know, this is, you know, another example of the juvenile justice system being broken, and we're, you know, we've talked about this multiple other examples over the last months and maybe even longer. And, you know, this is, I think, a situation we're beginning to, I think, raise the public and more importantly, the lawmakers, the legislative branches of government, a recognition that the juvenile justice system needs to be reassessed. And I think that one of the areas that I would like to see addressed is allowing judges that are dealing with young offenders to, as adults, to have access to their juvenile records to more appropriately make decisions about release and sentencing to properly assess the risks and dangers that these youthful young adults are perpetrating crimes of violence on the community.
Rafi, I mean, when we look at this, a lot of refusals here, domestic battery on a partner, illegal possession of a stolen automobile, peewit of marijuana, resisting an officer. I mean, it's kind of curious what's happening there. But what's also curious is that it seems as though these cases are sitting in screening for a long time, right? If you look at the possession of a firearm or weapon by a felon, he was arrested in July of 2023. It was accepted in December of 2023. I mean, you know, a possession of a firearm or weapon by a felon in possession of a firearm, it's a relatively simple case. I mean, we're going to be going now on 13, 14 months since the arrest, and we haven't concluded this case? I mean, if we're having this kind of difficulty in the throughput, we're in trouble. I mean, we're in real trouble.
Right. So that particular case...
You look at the same thing on this possession of a stolen automobile, arrested in the second week of August of 2023, not accepted until the second week of October, 60 days. Same thing in the other cases. I mean, we're pushing the outer limits of what's allowed to have a decision made here.
Right. So one of the problems that you have with respect to domestic violence cases. So in domestic violence cases, the victim, the battered partner, when they call the police, they want that person removed from the house. So they're cooperating with law enforcement. What has historically happened with respect to domestic violence cases is that after the arrest, after the offender has been removed from the house, things calm down. Quite often when the DA's office contacts those victims to move forward with the case, because you need the testimony of the battered partner to prove the case, and if they no longer want to cooperate because they've moved on or they've reconciled with their partner, that is not a problem that's unique to this case. That's a universal, you know. And you see a very high percentage of domestic violence cases refused, and that's not to blame the incomplete or inadequate investigation on the police or even the efforts of the district attorney's office in this. Quite frankly, it's more about the relationship between the arrested subject and the victim, and oftentimes the victims decide that they don't want to move forward with the case. So that makes that problematic. When it comes to the convicted felon possession of a firearm, I agree with what you said. Those are among the easiest cases to prove. And the fact that this case is sitting around since July of 2023 is, you know, a problem. And I don't know. I didn't look up to see which section of court that was allotted to, or what the issues are in that particular case. But depending on who the judge that case was assigned to, as we previously talked about, some judges may have an open inventory of 400 plus cases. Other judges may have an inventory of 100 to 110 cases. So the judge that has a larger inventory means that that case is struggling for docket time, and there are other cases at any given time. I just ran the inmate population for the local jail, and there are 1,452 people in pretrial custody as of September the 2nd. There are 232 people in pretrial custody waiting to be tried on homicide charges. On felony weapons offenses, there are 111 inmates in there waiting to be tried on felony weapons offenses right now. So, again, that is another issue. That's the system backed up, not being properly managed. If you have some judges that have inventories of 100 cases and other judges with 400 cases, that's an indication that the judge with 400 cases isn't properly managing their caseload of open inventory prosecutions. So, and that'll be, we've talked about those issues before. We're going to be coming out with a report later this fall on the judiciary. But, there are a number of red flags with respect to DeAndre Hickman's system or record and the system itself. We talked about the juvenile justice system, but there are other issues, as you pointed out, that reflect, some inadequate processing of case time and problematic, refusal rates. But you have to look at those individually, and you need to really have access to the police reports, which I don't have access to.
Because part of the issue here is obviously if the throughput on that case was just at a level of mediocrity, he wouldn't have been out. I mean, he was obviously out of jail, and you know as well as I the impact of these gun toters. And if the gun toter is out of jail, that individual needs to be given priority. And again, it highlights if the DA was aware of the violent nature of this individual as a result of his juvenile record, that case would have had to have been flagged, to do everything short of maybe vertical prosecution to get that case into court, because this guy was going to be a problem, and he proved it.
Mm-hmm. Predict the future is to look at the past.
And at least the most recent past.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, that's what we're talking about. Yeah. So this is, he's arrested August the 28th of 2024. And we know that, he was arrested four times while he was in the Bridge City facility. He was arrested and he actually served time as an adult for that. So we also know that as an adult, he's being prosecuted for being convicted felon possession of a firearm. And that charge has been open and pending since mid-2023. And now we have another series of arrests. And I, at this point in time, he's staying in pretrial custody. His bail is set at over $300,000, $325,000. He's not getting out right now. But again, if the judge in juvenile court in Jefferson Parish that sentenced him to time for the second degree battery, that sentence could have been more if the judge was allowed to look at some of his juvenile records in this. And I think that's particularly relevant because if he's committing those crimes of violence while he's in a correctional facility and he was serving time in a juvenile correctional facility for what I suspect, I don't know, but what I suspect is a crime of violence, because, and I base that on the fact that if he was in that facility as a 20-year-old, that means he's serving juvenile life, and you don't get juvenile life for property offenses. You get juvenile life for crimes of violence. And if a judge can't take that into consideration, you know, it is not only a disservice to the public, it's also a disservice to that young man. Because, you know, the whole purpose of sentencing is to basically impose consequences, but also to rehabilitate. And if you can't properly have access to relevant information, it limits the judge's ability to be more effective in their role in determining what the appropriate sanctions are and sentences are, and how to make important decisions that could not only impact public safety, but also the future of the defendant in this. So the system just is not working. I don't know how many more examples we need to dig out there. What I do know, and you know this too, it's not a question of if, it's when the next one of these is going to be brought to our attention or someone else in the media's attention. And we'll be talking about those in the weeks and months ahead.
No doubt. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, the president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We were just talking about a case that is emblematic of a number of issues within our juvenile court system, transferring cases, and, you know, as cases go through adult system once they offend in adult court. But there have been a lot of successes that the DA's office has had here recently as well, right?
Right, right, right. So we have our big annual awards luncheon coming up a week from today. And I believe you're doing a remote from that site. So there'll be some interesting things that will be available to the public to hear. But so we give awards to investigative and prosecutive teams that achieve some really outstanding results for the public. And last week we talked about a case that the Bogalusa Police Department, Louisiana State Police, and the St. Tammany, Washington Parish DA's office did in a prosecution of an 18-year-old that was prosecuted and convicted for a murder, an attempted murder, and another drive-by shooting. And today we're going to talk about another group of awardees that were prosecuting an 18-year-old. So we just finished talking in the first segment about DeAndre Hickman, who in 2018, he was 18 years old, and he committed all of those offenses while he was in the Bridge City Detention Facility. So the Crime Commission is giving our highest award to the New Orleans Police Department, the officers, and the prosecutors that worked together to obtain a conviction of Tyrone Steele. And in March of 2022, Tyrone Steele, as an 18-year-old, violently murdered four individuals. This guy is a walking crime wave, and the police department did an outstanding job in not just developing probable cause, but sufficient proof to obtain a conviction, and prosecutors put it together. But let me, you know, give you a little background on what he did. So in March of 2022, Steele targeted and murdered three victims. A 27-year-old, Darren Williams, who was the main target of the triple homicide. Several weeks before Tyrone Steele murdered Darren Williams, Williams and Steele were involved in a shootout outside a local business. Steele tracked Williams down to his apartment and murdered him, broke into the house and murdered him while he was asleep on the sofa. Then Steele went into one of the bedrooms and murdered Nehemiah Jones and his girlfriend, Amya Corin, while they were in bed. So three homicides from this March 21st, 22 event. 5 days later, the police recovered the body of Shane Brown, a 20-year-old, who was shot in the back of the head and dumped in a canal in Little Woods. And Steele took Brown's car and fled, and the police suspect that Brown was murdered to prevent him from implicating Steele in the triple homicide. So how do you go from, you know, believing that he's involved in this to arresting him and obtaining a conviction? You do that with good sound police work, evidence. And in this particular case, this case was built on NOPD detectives tying together evidence from multiple homicides, multiple crime scenes, and social media posts by Steele. The investigators developed and used scientific evidence that included ballistics shell casings from the street shootout between Steele and Williams. Those shell casings from that street shootout matched the murder scene casings of the weapon that that Tyrone Steele used to murder Mr. Williams in his while he was sleeping on the sofa in his apartment. So you have ballistics that matched both the shooting scene and the homicide scene. You had social media posts by Steele naming his victims and bragging about the murder. That was evidence that investigators uncovered, and that was presented to the jury. And then there was DA and video footage of Steele driving Shane Brown's victim number four's vehicle after his murder. There were no eyewitnesses to the crimes. There were no murder weapons ever recovered. So this is a scientific case, and that case was put together by the police department and presented to the district attorney's office, and this case was tried with a week-long trial, and after 4 hours of deliberation, you know, a jury returned a guilty as charged on three counts of first-degree murder, one count of second-degree murder, aggravated burglary, conspiracy to commit aggravated burglary, discharging a firearm during a violent act, and he's now serving life in prison. So, you know, this young man, as an 18-year-old, was a stone-cold killer, was a serial killer. And not only was he held accountable for those, but as an 18-year-old, if he committed four murders in over the course of a one-week period of time, if he had not been arrested, if this work done by the police department and the district attorney's office had not been as thorough and effective as it was, he would still be out on the streets, and our homicide rate would be higher because of it, because he wasn't going to stop. And so this is one of the cases that we're going to be acknowledging at our awards luncheon next Thursday. and it's well deserved. It's very, very gratifying to me as a former prosecutor, and I'm sure to you as the former sheriff, to see this type of work resulting in holding somebody accountable and removing him from the streets and making the community safer because of the fine work of police and prosecutors working together as a team.
No doubt, and it would be interesting to know what his juvenile history was leading up to these murders as an 18-year-old. Not to belabor the point, right? But, you know, because you don't know what the efficiency and effectiveness of the juvenile system is. I mean, I always said that we should judge the effectiveness of what we're doing in the juvenile arena by looking at the individual offenders 2 years post maturity, you know, majority. And look back to see what, you know, to judge what we're doing, whether or not it's working. Because if it's not working, we need to change it, right? I mean, and you look at these evidence-based outcomes, you try and figure out the analysis that you're going to deploy. We don't do that on a system-wide basis here in the state of Louisiana. The states that have been more successful, you know as well as I, that's exactly what they've done.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, so Tyrone Steele in 2022 was an 18-year-old. Yeah. And, you know, I share your opinion. I would be stunned if he did not have a juvenile record. You know, and if he doesn't have a juvenile record, it doesn't mean that he wasn't involved in crime. He just may not have been arrested at the time.
Right.
But, you know, the bottom line in all of this is that the whole purpose of the juvenile justice system is to, you know, identify those individuals that are committing, you know, crimes. And you treat property offenders differently than you treat violent offenders as a juvenile. And I agree with that. But, you know, when you see an 18-year-old involved in four homicides over a one-week period of time, I suspect that there were offenses that he committed as a 17-year-old. You don't go from being a choir boy to a stone-cold killer on your 18th birthday. Something, you know, it was amiss, and it probably means that he had other problems as a juvenile offender. Did the system identify those problems and deal with them? Because if he did come in contact with the system and he's doing this as an 18-year-old, this would be yet another example of the juvenile justice system being ineffective in preventing these offenders from progressing to be adult offenders. And it doesn't get more serious than four homicides over a week's period of time.
And we thank Sergeant Robert Barrera, Detective Kevin Burns, Detective Nicholas Davis, as well as ADA Corbin Bates and Corey Tassan, supported by Trial Assistant Dana Casbon and Victim Advocate Natasha Childress, as well as Investigator Elizabeth Garcia, under the leadership of the Investigations Bureau Chief of Aaron Washington. We thank all of them for their work that they did on this case. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, September 1st, just a few days ago, 4 days ago, we reached that 100 murder threshold in the city of New Orleans, a little later than previous years.
Right. So, you know, that's the number, homicides. That's what people pay attention to. And as you pointed out, we reached the 100 homicide victim threshold on September the 1st of this year. To get to 100 last year, we did it on May the 14th of 2023, and in 2022, we did it on May the 1st. So that's progress. That's not, you know, I'm not declaring victory, nor is the police department. One homicide is one too many. But, you know, that shows you some of the progress that's being made, and, you know, I want to know why that's happening. That's something that you always preach, you know. Tell me the why. Well, you know, here are some other numbers that I think maybe puts this in perspective. So between January and August this year, felony arrests increased 13% compared to last year, keeping in mind that we don't have any more officers than we have. So right. What's happening, what's contributing to the fact that arrests are going up? I believe that arrests are going up because crime is going down, meaning that when we have insufficient officers to respond to calls for service because of the volume, as the volume of crime decreases, that means the available officers can get to the 911 calls and respond quicker than what they did. So even though crime is declining, officers are now able to get to the calls that are coming in, and they're arresting more people because crime has been declining, which means that they are not literally running from one call for service to the next. They can actually do more and actually be available to get to more crime scenes in a timely manner. And time is of the utmost importance in responding quickly. That increases the chances of arrest. Police made 105 more violent felony arrests, which is an 8% increase this year versus the same point in time last year. The largest increases were for robberies, 37 more robbery arrests, even though robberies are down. Again, police are able to respond more, and I think they're also using technology more to solve a lot of these crimes. So weapons arrests went down by 9%. So what are the police doing? Part of that is you have the new constitutional carry laws that went into effect. So it's harder for police to do gun enforcement. So what they're doing is we see a 48% increase in drug arrests, which means that police department were previously using weapons offenses as a proactive strategy to target weapons offenders. You can't do that anymore because of the law change. So what the police department is doing is they're looking for drug cases. And when you make those drug cases, particularly for distribution or possession with intent to distribute, many of the people involved in the drug trade have weapons on them. So they're taking weapons out by targeting drug offenders. And if you look at the homicide solve rate, we're 42% year to date in 2024. Year versus 31% year to date in 2023. So they're solving a higher percentage of the homicides that are being perpetrated this year, in part because we have fewer homicides. That gives the homicide detectives the opportunity to spend more time in trying to solve cases rather than just processing the next homicide that, you know, happens on their duty day. So these are all positives. These are all numbers that are moving in the right direction. And there's a cause and effect between all of this. So crime going down means that, you know, there are fewer calls that police have to respond to, which means that police are able to respond to the calls that do come in a more timely manner. That increases the potential for arrest. It leads to lower crime and the lower homicide rate that we're seeing.
Yeah. I mean, those are all the contributing issues to a lot of the success, right? I mean, it's not, I say this all the time, it's just not rocket science, right? The more arrests you make, the more folks you selectively incapacitate, especially if they're impact folks. And I've been impressed with the number of the cases NOPD has made recently in a very short period of time after the commission of the crime, which is even better, right? You're removing these guys off the street. And I don't know about you, but it seems as though magistrate court's philosophy as it relates to bail amounts may have changed a little bit. Seems like.
And so I think a lot of it is because now the media and your show have done a good job in focusing on some of these issues. That does not go unnoticed by the rest of the criminal justice system, including the judiciary. So I think that there is more use of technology. So the murder quadruple shooting that occurred over the weekend outside that bar in Mid-City with a car flipped over and one woman was killed and four other people were wounded and all of that, that case was solved in large part because of crime cameras, Project NOLA cameras, that were able to capture that on video. It helped give the police the evidence that they needed to arrest someone. A lady by the name of Marks has been arrested. There are other people that are under investigation right now. But that type of technology is a force multiplier. And the fact that I'm looking at the acceptance and refusal rates for homicides by the district attorney's office, and the district attorney's office in Orleans Parish this year is accepting 78% of all the homicide cases that come across their desk. That's good work, both by the police department, and the work that they're doing is being augmented by technology and forensics.
No doubt, for sure. Absolutely. As always, we really appreciate you joining us for this hour. The time flies by. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll visit with you again next week.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. We'll be right back, folks. That was Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Scoot's up next. We'll check in with him when we return. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Okay, where's the buzz? The Saints are about to start the new season, and I don't hear the buzz. Where is the buzz? It's almost like this is a preseason game. No, the Saints opened the season Sunday, so I think we'll talk about that. And ABBA doesn't want Trump to play any of their music. Yeah, I'm sure they're playing Dancing Queen when they introduce him, right?
We'll talk about that. Yeah. Scoot's up next. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you in the morning. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, September 1st, just a few days ago, 4 days ago, we reached that 100 murder threshold in the city of New Orleans, a little later than previous years.
Right. So, you know, that's the number, homicides. That's what people pay attention to. And as you pointed out, we reached the 100 homicide victim threshold on September the 1st of this year. To get to 100 last year, we did it on May the 14th of 2023, and in 2022, we did it on May the 1st. So that's progress. That's not, you know, I'm not declaring victory, nor is the police department. One homicide is one too many. But, you know, that shows you some of the progress that's being made, and, you know, I want to know why that's happening. That's something that you always preach, you know. Tell me the why. Well, you know, here are some other numbers that I think maybe puts this in perspective. So between January and August this year, felony arrests increased 13% compared to last year, keeping in mind that we don't have any more officers than we have. So right. What's happening, what's contributing to the fact that arrests are going up? I believe that arrests are going up because crime is going down, meaning that when we have insufficient officers to respond to calls for service because of the volume, as the volume of crime decreases, that means the available officers can get to the 911 calls and respond quicker than what they did. So even though crime is declining, officers are now able to get to the calls that are coming in, and they're arresting more people because crime has been declining, which means that they are not literally running from one call for service to the next. They can actually do more and actually be available to get to more crime scenes in a timely manner. And time is of the utmost importance in responding quickly. That increases the chances of arrest. Police made 105 more violent felony arrests, which is an 8% increase this year versus the same point in time last year. The largest increases were for robberies, 37 more robbery arrests, even though robberies are down. Again, police are able to respond more, and I think they're also using technology more to solve a lot of these crimes. So weapons arrests went down by 9%. So what are the police doing? Part of that is you have the new constitutional carry laws that went into effect. So it's harder for police to do gun enforcement. So what they're doing is we see a 48% increase in drug arrests, which means that police department were previously using weapons offenses as a proactive strategy to target weapons offenders. You can't do that anymore because of the law change. So what the police department is doing is they're looking for drug cases. And when you make those drug cases, particularly for distribution or possession with intent to distribute, many of the people involved in the drug trade have weapons on them. So they're taking weapons out by targeting drug offenders. And if you look at the homicide solve rate, we're 42% year-to-date in 2024. Year versus 31% year to date in 2023. So they're solving a higher percentage of the homicides that are being perpetrated this year, in part because we have fewer homicides. That gives the homicide detectives the opportunity to spend more time in trying to solve cases rather than just processing the next homicide that, you know, happens on their duty day. So these are all positives. These are all numbers that are moving in the right direction. And there's a cause and effect between all of this. So crime going down means that, you know, there are fewer calls that police have to respond to, which means that police are able to respond to the calls that do come in a more timely manner. That increases the potential for arrest. It leads to lower crime and the lower homicide rate that we're seeing.
Yeah. I mean, those are all the contributing issues to a lot of the success, right? I mean, it's not, I say this all the time, it's just not rocket science, right? The more arrests you make, the more folks you selectively incapacitate, especially if they're impact folks. And I've been impressed with the number of the cases NOPD has made recently in a very short period of time after the commission of the crime, which is even better, right? You're removing these guys off the street. And I don't know about you, but it seems as though magistrate court's philosophy as it relates to bail amounts may have changed a little bit. It just seems like.
And so I think a lot of it is because now the media and your show have done a good job in focusing on some of these issues. That does not go unnoticed by the rest of the criminal justice system, including the judiciary. So I think that there is more use of technology. So the murder quadruple shooting that occurred over the weekend outside that bar in Mid-City where the car flipped over and one woman was killed and four other people were wounded and all of that, that case was solved in large part because of crime cameras, Project NOLA cameras, that were able to capture that on video. It helped give the police the evidence that they needed to arrest someone. A lady by the name of Marks has been arrested. There are other people that are under investigation right now. But that type of technology is a force multiplier. And the fact that I'm looking at the acceptance and refusal rates for homicides by the district attorney's office, and the district attorney's office in Orleans Parish this year is accepting 78% of all the homicide cases that come across their desk. That's good work, both by the police department and the work that they're doing is being augmented by technology and forensics.
No doubt, for sure. Absolutely. As always, we really appreciate you joining us for this hour. The time flies by. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll visit with you again next week.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. We'll be right back, folks. That was Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Scoot's up next. We'll check in with him when we return. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Okay, where's the buzz? The Saints are about to start the new season. And I don't hear the buzz. Where is the buzz? It's almost like this is a preseason game. No, the Saints open the season Sunday, so I think we'll talk about that. And ABBA doesn't want Trump to play any of their music. Yeah, I'm sure they're playing Dancing Queen when they introduce him, right?
We'll talk about that. Yeah. Scoot's up next. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you in the morning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.